Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Matt Spiegel, and I can't wait to bring you Season 2 of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. It's a job so special that even Joe Buck told us he will probably go back to it.
I'm 53, basically 54. I think it's too early to say nevers at this point in my life. I think at some point I'll get the itch again.
Incredible guests sharing great stories from your favorite teams coming this year. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.
Good afternoon,
Bears fans. This is Take the North with your hosts, David Haw and Dan Weider.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Welcome to the Take the North podcast. I am David Haw from the Mullin Haw Show on 670 The Score. Dan Weider, the regular co-host, is on vacation, or so he says. He could be back in L.A., maybe scouting out the restaurant in West Hollywood where they took Caleb Williams and the USC teammates, and maybe he's back on the road, or maybe he's down in Florida still at the owners' meetings after they left town in Orlando. Whatever the case is, we are here. This is our mailbag episode, and we're looking forward to hearing from you, the loyal listener and watcher. You can watch us on the 670 Scores YouTube page. You certainly can find us on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And we will answer all your Bears questions as long as we have them. And that brings in our producer, Adam Sadzinski, who will process your questions and throw in his 2 cents whenever he has 2 cents to chip in. Adam, how are we doing today?
Doing good, David. Doing good. How's everything on your end?
Good. So the Caleb Williams clap back to some of his critics was entertaining on a Friday morning. I don't know if people saw that. Check it out. He reacted to, well, in the past week, he was at a USC women's basketball game with a pink phone. It became a meme. And then he went back at some people who talked about the pink phone. Did he have pink nail polish too, Adam? Do you know these important details?
I can't remember if the nails were pink in that one or not. I they might have been. Well, you know, we'll double check. Actually, you know what? I'm not even going to look. It doesn't matter.
He's having fun with it.
The phone case was pink. The phone case.
Yeah, he's having fun with it. And I think that's the way to approach it. Don't take yourself too seriously. Don't take the reaction too seriously. And if you haven't seen Kyle Brandt's rant on Good Morning Football on the NFL Network, which is also circulating, you can get it on my Twitter account, at David Haw. I retweeted it because it was fantastic. Kyle Brandt questioning people who questioned Caleb Williams over the choice of the color for his phone cover or his nails or whatever you want to pick on Caleb Williams for. Things that are unrelated to his ability to throw the football better than any Bears quarterback probably ever has.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
The whole thing, I think, was totally – the fact that and this is something I found, especially in the last few months – Bears Twitter especially can get really toxic, and there's a lot of stuff like that out there. So it didn't surprise me, unfortunately, that some people out there had issues with this, which, like you said, has nothing to do with his ability to throw a football, which is the thing you should care most about. So the whole thing, I think, was really silly. And I agree with you. Kyle Brandt was really good talking about this and pointing out how ridiculous all the people that chose to criticize him for it were.
So next week, Caleb Williams is scheduled. We don't know the exact date yet, but loosely, first week in April to visit Halisaw. We do know from reports out of Washington that Roma Dunze is scheduled to visit to Halisaw. Now, Roma Dunze is interesting because depending on what mock draft you look at, he is likely the third wide receiver to come off the board. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers from LSU, and then Roma Dunze at number nine, possibly to the Bears. That's been mocked in a couple different spots. So his visit, I think it was another scout from the NFL Network who speculated the Bears would really like to take Roma Dunze at number nine. It's hard to know what to believe and what not to believe, but that would be a good spot for him. And I think if he's visiting Halisaw, it just underscores the interest that they may have. And I don't think Malik Nabers is scheduled to visit, and certainly not Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't think anybody expects those two guys to be there at number nine when the Bears are on the clock.
And yeah, I don't expect either of them to be there either. But Roma Dunze is one of two guys that if they're still on the board at nine, the Bears, Ryan Poles, should go sprinting up to the podium with their card and never look back. I'm more in the camp of trade back unless one of these two guys is there. One is Joe Alt and the other is Roma Dunze. I mean, if Roma Dunze especially, I understand if they're committed to Braxton Jones, but if Roma Dunze is there, they should go running up there, and because that is a guy that would probably go in the top five most years. I would think.
He's Jamar Chase-like, right? And he would be the Jamar Chase, and like Joe Burrow, he would be that guy to Caleb Williams. They come into the league together. They weren't college teammates, but certainly they could establish a quick rapport as NFL rookies together. So I think that's a good way to look at it. If either one of those guys, Alt or Dunze, are on the board, maybe you take whichever one is higher on your board. But if neither one of them is, trading back is justifiable in that position, I think, even if it's a top defensive player.
Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
So lots of possibilities. I'm sure some of the mailbag questions will be related to the draft. So let's look at some of the mailbag questions. You were kind enough to send in some people on the Twitter feed or to our email account, which is takethenorthpod@gmail.com. And our Twitter feed is @takethenorthpod. So you can get it to us in certain ways or whatever directly in our Enough of you know how to reach me directly that you can ask me however you want. Heck, I answered a couple questions in the White Sox parking lot before the Sox opening day on Thursday. So you can find me wherever you can find me. We'll answer the questions. All right, Adam. So let's start with the mailbag.
All right. So first of all,
DeVale is here.
There it is. Okay.
I love that.
We'll start with our email. So again, the email is takethenorthpod@gmail.com. I'm going to take a shot at pronouncing this person's name, but I'm probably going to butcher it. So it's Irfan, I believe, I-R-F-A-N. Okay. And this one is kind of counter to what we were just talking about in regards to the number nine overall pick. So their question is, bringing in the extra draft capital the Bears have in 2025 from the Panthers, that's a second round pick. So would Ryan Poles consider using their own or the Panthers' second round pick in 2025 to move up from number nine to guarantee themselves the player they want, or getting more draft capital in the second or third round for this year if they were to trade back? So really, could they consider moving up and using that extra pick next year?
You know, I understand why that would be a question, because you want to get somebody who you might be fixated on, maybe have a good feel from the personal visit or pro day or the combine. But I think you got to remember a couple things. I think, first of all, this draft class is also kind of the de facto draft class, including Montez Sweat, Ryan Bates. You know, even you could extend it to from there, but you get and Keenan Allen. So you've got Keenan Allen, Montez Sweat, and Ryan Bates with the fourth round pick, the second round pick, and a fifth round pick. So that's a pretty good haul, regardless of who else you get. The Bears are at four draft picks right now. No team has fewer than the Bears do right now. So I don't think that you want to necessarily get too greedy. I think that, you give up a draft pick, and I know it's next year's 2025 pick you got in the deal, but it's also not necessary, I think, to do that unless you're really, really fixated. And I think, as we talked about, Adam, there are going to be a couple players in all likelihood, if there's either a left tackle that's a guy you can lean on for the next 8 to 10 years, or a wide receiver that you can envision being real dynamic with your quarterback. If either one of those two guys are there, there's no reason to move up. I mean, and if they aren't, maybe it's not worth it. So you're in a good position. I just think you create more problems for yourself by giving up something to move up a couple spots when you are guaranteed staying there and still probably being in a very, very good spot.
All right, yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't tend to think or want them to go jumping up the draft board to grab a guy, even if they do feel really strongly about Rome Odunze. If they've said to themselves, we want to go get Marvin Harrison Jr., who I think is a better prospect, not a ton better, but is the better prospect and would be the number one receiver in basically any draft. If they said to themselves they want to go get him, I guess I'd probably be okay with it.
I think I'd be okay with it. Yeah, think I'd be okay with it. I think it's probably unrealistic, but I would be okay with it. And I guess we shouldn't assume anything. Mike Tannenbaum, who's a highly respected former general manager, I think Mike has done a terrific job a couple stops. He's at an ESPN. He's got a mock draft out there that includes the Cardinals and the Vikings making a trade, trading Kyler Murray to the Vikings. Then the Cardinals taking J.J. McCarthy, and it all ends up with the Bears landing Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 9. That's outlandish to me. That's far-fetched, but it's a draft. And maybe Mike's talking to some people. We don't know. Point is that if something like that falls into your lap, or you see an opportunity where Marvin Harrison Jr. is there for the taking, maybe you pounce, but I would recommend probably standing pat.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I can't envision – and, you know, I understand that Mike Tannenbaum certainly has the credentials, but I just can't envision a scenario where Marvin Harrison Jr. gets past number 5. Like, and that's only if 4 quarterbacks go before him, because
I agree.
Yeah. I think it would be great if that's a guy that, and I didn't mention him earlier when I said that if, you know, the two guys that are on the board at 9, Bears should go sprinting up. Look, if Marvin Harrison Jr. is there, he's another one of those guys. Go running up and don't look back. But I can't see a scenario where that happens. If it does, then I think a lot of GMs overthought who the number one receiver in this draft is. So, okay, we'll move on here. And we got one more circulating around the number 9 pick. This comes from Twitter. So at Take the North Pod on Twitter. And Mike McElwee, I believe is how you say it. It's McElwee. So sorry, Mike, to our previous questioner that if I'm butchering these names, you think, you know, last name Stavinsky, I should be able to get these. But so anyway, Mike's question. With pick 9, if Odunze is available at 9, but so is J.J. McCarthy, and a team offers a second-round pick to move back 5 spots, do you do it? And then Mike adds, this team still has a lot of needs.
That's a really good question, and I'm sure the Bears are having these kind of conversations, and I hope that they're having these kind of simulations in Hallis Hall as they prepare for the draft, because you're going to have to think quick on your feet, and you don't want to be having that debate on draft night. So hypothetically, if a team wants to move up
from wherever in the bottom second 10 picks in the draft, and J.J. McCarthy is the object of their desire. And you know that. Would five picks going back, would it change your thinking, especially if Odunze is still on the board? I'd be inclined to take Odunze. I would be inclined to stay there and to take a sure thing and to not necessarily want to turn the ninth pick into two picks. And some people have different thoughts on that, but I believe that when you have the opportunity, I think everything is framed around a couple of things. One, remembering who's also part of this draft class because of the trades you made, and I said that earlier, but also who you're drafting first. So the draft, to me, if you have an opportunity with the other pick in the first round to complement your number one overall pick in Caleb Williams, presumably, then I think you want to do that. Moving back five spots, all of a sudden you've now opened up all these other doors that are of possibility. You could go defensive tackle. You could go edge rusher. You could go offensive tackle, which would help your quarterback, but maybe not as much as a premium elite wide receiver who in most years would be a top five pick. You take the gimme, and I don't think you overthink it.
I am in agreement with you on this one, too. If Odunze is there, I mean, like we've been saying, you got to take him. I don't think you should pass on that type of prospect. And the more I read about Odunze, it's not just the on-field stuff. Everything about him off-field seems to check every box you could possibly imagine. So I think it would do wonders for a locker room that already has a lot of strong and well put together personalities. And, you know, with the uncertainty of Keenan Allen past this season, I know that the Bears have kind of talked about, you know, Ryan Poles mentioned that he would like to have him more than a year. And I think he's got more than a year left in the tank if they do extend him, but there's no certainty there. And so by drafting Odunze, you guarantee yourself at least 4 years, maybe a fifth, with what I think is going to be a really strong wide receiver. And that way, if you do move on from Keenan Allen after this year, then you still have DJ Moore and Rome Odunze, and you can continue adding through the draft or free agency. So, yeah, I just think that if he's there, you got to take him. It would be tempting to move back and add draft capital, but I think that Ryan Poles is actually pretty comfortable with the capital that they have. So I don't think he's going to get crazy and desperate to move down. It wouldn't shock me if he did, but I don't think he's desperate to.
All right. What's the next question?
So, all right. We'll stick on Twitter for this one. This one is from Big Phil on Twitter, who I have back and forth with a lot on Twitter. He's one of my favorite followers. So do you think Caleb Williams was always the move, or was this really a difficult choice, get to a different quarterback? Also, why is the team not signed an edge yet? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. So, Phil, it's a good question. I assume the meaning is, or the question revolves around, was Caleb Williams always the top choice over keeping Justin Fields? And I would tell you, based on not just the information from people who cover the team and even people that I've spoken to around the league, but there does seem to be the feeling that once Caleb Williams was obviously coming out, and maybe we didn't know that until January 15th officially, but that's always been the plan. I don't think that the Bears did anything more than conduct and perform due diligence in trying to take their time and making sure that they were doing this right. They were deliberate in picking a lane. They wanted to make sure, it was sincere, that they wanted to do right by Justin. Maybe they tried to do that too hard and too much. That's a different conversation. But I think that the time that it took to unload, and that's what they did, unload Justin Fields was related to, number one, making sure that they found a good fit for him. Secondly, realizing how hard it was to make a trade once you have tipped your hand that you were going to move on, which they did at the combine. And the other thing is that, you know, very delicately handling a situation that's unique because Justin Fields was so popular in Chicago and in the locker room. But I think that coaches and executives are influenced most. I mean, what is the biggest influencer? They always say the eye in the sky doesn't lie. And you can evaluate, you know, veterans. You can evaluate tryout guys. What do you see on the tape? And the tape made this an easy decision. Caleb Williams is phenomenal. And you can say what you want about concerns about his personality and interviews by his father and all the things that have created a lot of noise. when you mute the noise and you turn on the screen and you're playing it back, all you see from Caleb Williams on tape is a potential superstar. And that, to me, was what the Bears always knew, and they knew it early. So when it came to trading Justin Fields, they opted for closure over compensation. It didn't matter what the Steelers necessarily were giving them. It was that they were giving them anything at all. And I'm probably overstating that and probably presuming a lot, but it was pretty clear that the Bears, once they decided to move on, they viewed, you know, they viewed Justin Fields as a liability if he stayed, because of the way that he would make it awkward and difficult for Caleb Williams to assimilate into the NFL and be the leader they need him to be. So there's a lot there, but it's a really good question, and it's one that comes up a lot.
Yeah, I think that from the second the Bears secured the number one overall pick, Justin Fields' fate was sealed. I don't think that once the Bears knew they were going to have the top pick in the draft, I'm pretty sure that they knew they'd seen everything they need to see in Justin. They locked up the number one pick the second to last game of the season, right? So, but I think by then they had to have known what their plan was going to be, even if they wanted to go through an evaluation, which they should, and I'm sure they did. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that Justin Fields stood a chance against a quarterback class that, yes, has Caleb Williams, but also has a couple other really good quarterback prospects. So now, as for was Caleb Williams always the move, kind of what you were talking about, probably, but they needed to do the work. I would guess that if you got Ryan Poles in a really honest moment in early January and you said, are you taking Caleb Williams? He would probably say, well, yeah.
Right.
And because you, if from what we hear about most general managers around the league or league officials who, you know, whether it's yourself or Dan have been able to get information from, or anyone else around the score or the pod, pretty much it's almost not unanimous, but it's close that any GM that doesn't have Patrick Mahomes or, you know, one of these other top quarterbacks would be taking Caleb Williams. So it's unfortunate for Justin Fields in a lot of ways, but to directly answer the question, like, Caleb Williams wasn't always the guy, to put quotes on it, but I think it was pretty much secured once they knew they had the number one pick, and that meant that they were going to have to move Justin Fields.
Good question, Phil. That's a good one.
Yeah, it was a good one. So another one from Twitter here. This one is from this one's from a fellow Leatherneck, actually.
All right.
My guy Nico. So, where are people supposed to park if the Bears build a stadium on the lakefront? If they want a bigger stadium that can host major events, they need more parking than they already have and are planning to build on the parking lot.
Okay, that's a really good question. That's a really good question, Leatherneck, Nico. I know you guys are very practical that come from Western Illinois, and you worry about prep parking because everything's so crowded in Macomb. There's no space out there at all.
There's no space in Macomb,
no, let me tell you. It's just vast cornfield after cornfield, but there's no place to park.
You can't park in the cornfields, David. It's funny. We do actually, Western does actually have a huge parking lot. It's called Q Lot. It's massive. I've never seen it full. So parking is not an issue.
I went to undergrad in Muncie, Indiana. So I'm not one to Macomb is a fine place. I have nothing against Macomb because I went, hey, you know, everyone has their alma mater they're proud of, and it's great. So as for the question, it's a really good one though, because there's so much more in terms of details and things being official, and the speculation is fierce around these projects. But here's what I know from talking to people around the project, especially after the latest story came out this week with Kevin Warren doubling down at the owners' meetings about being fixated and focused on the lakefront property. It isn't where the South Lot is now, where the stadium is planned to be constructed, where the first shovel hits the dirt. It's where the Waldron Lot is. And the plan preliminary, I don't want to misstate this, but I believe that the preliminary plan calls for parking underneath where the current Soldier Field is. So it's underground parking to accommodate all that would be necessary. I don't know how they would do it, but it's part of a grand, maybe ambitious idea, which would require the approval of Friends of the Parks, which isn't going to come easily, and they're not going to go away quietly, and certainly not without their lawyers. But conceptually speaking, I think the plan for parking is underground beneath Soldier Field where it stands now. The stadium itself, which it currently in it, the way it is put together now, the spaceship would be deconstructed. It would be sent back to whatever planet it came from. The only thing existing about the Soldier Field structure now would be the colonnades. They'd be intact. And the other rest of the museum campus under this plan would be redeveloped. There would be a hotel, perhaps. That would not be a deal breaker, but it'd be part of it. A sports museum and then a pedestrian walkway connecting to Northerly Island. And the parking, it'd be difficult. What I don't yet know yet for sure is, like, how would you increase access to the museum campus from Lakeshore Drive, as well as where would you put all the cars once they get there? Tremendous logistical challenge, but one, if the Bears hadn't tried to consider this or have a plan, there's no way they would get this far.
Yeah, I have to believe that there is a plan for parking, but I understand, like, everything that you're saying there. You know, the Soldier Field already has a deck underneath it for the most part. They can expand on that. They just have to leave the columns, right? But I have trouble envisioning enough parking, because there's already a struggle for parking in my mind. It's Soldier Field, and so I have trouble envisioning how they make this work with all the parking that they're going to need. And you know, I understand you can expand it, you know, kind of what you're hinting at there, expand it otherwise, but then you have to create more access to museum campus and to Northerly Island. As of right now, there's what, two roads that access that area.
It's not the parking, it's the congestion because of the parking that exists now, trying to get back out of there. Going to a Bears game, people are excited. They are going to tailgate. They may get there early. They stagger their arrival. So it's not maybe as bad of a situation, but the problem's getting out. The problem is leaving, especially if you're pissed off or you're cold or you're tired and all the things, and you can't get out of there and you're stuck. That's what they need to address.
Yeah, exactly. So I would imagine that they would have to do a lot of work around the area to create more access. Like, if this is really their plan, they have to go all out with it, because you can't build this huge, massive, awesome looking stadium that can hold Super Bowls and Final Fours and you know, whatever sporting event you can imagine, and still have the same logistical issues that they have, because it's just not great right now. So as to you know, Nico's question with the parking, I have trouble. That's one of my main hangups with, and why I still am hesitant to believe this is they're really serious about this, is because that's the kind of thing that I'm sure they could make it work, but it feels like you're sacrificing the logical move for the beauty move, which the views from Soldier Field of downtown and the park and everything are great. They're awesome, and you want to maintain that. I understand it, but I just can't see the actual logistics working out here.
I agree with that. I agree in principle, but I also think that logistics will not stand in the way if they could figure out the financing. The financing remains the biggest challenge, and I even think the financing might be the biggest the biggest part that we don't know, the biggest unknown about this project. We know that there could be a legal fight if it's Friends of the Parks. We know that there are logistical challenges because of the cars and congestion, but that's still kind of like you don't know if that's going to get in the way as much as how do you pay for it, and that will dictate whether or not this happens or not more than any other factor.
Right. I'm with you totally. And kind of like I was saying, they'll figure out a way to have parking. It just might be a mess. no matter what, during construction, it'll be a mess. So I don't know how they continue playing there while they're building another stadium, but that's a whole nother topic if they even get there. So, all right, David, we'll do one more. So we'll go back to our email. I saved this one for a fun one at the end. This is from, again, it's takethenorthpod@gmail.com. From Evan Fisher: with the mentality of quality over quantity for this upcoming draft? Does it make sense for the Bears to use their fourth round pick to draft one of the most electrifying special teams players to come into the league in recent history by selecting Torrey Taylor? If you don't know who Torrey Taylor is, he is the punter for Iowa. Or was the punter for Iowa. Being an Iowa fan, I've watched his entire career, and the awesome Aussie is going to be a lock in the team's punting unit for years to come. His achievements and t-shirts speak for themselves, as the kid has the talent to make punting fun to watch on the national stage. Trenton Gill is a stand-up guy, but average. Taylor is elite. Your thoughts, okay. David?
Very good question. You know, Molly and I have a back and forth in the morning show regularly about the value of a punter, and he's big on the Bears getting a punter. And when I talk about priorities, I talk about, well, one more weapon and a left tackle and an edge rusher and a three technique. And Molly's like, what about punter? And he always throws it in. And largely it's because of Torrey Taylor, because of he's a weapon. So ordinarily, most seasons, I might dismiss this kind of thing like, well, you know, they only have four picks. And boy, why would you waste it on a punter? It wouldn't be wasted on a punter. But I just think that the list of priorities that I just described, they're going to take a quarterback, one. They're going to probably take a wide receiver, left tackle, or defensive player, two. Boy, if they don't get an edge rusher in the first round, they better use it on the third pick. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, best available athlete. Have they gotten a center yet? Do they trust Ryan Bates to be that guy? Who's going to be your fourth round pick? Oh, a punter? I don't know. This might not be the year to put quality over quantity is the way you justify only having four picks. And you look at the rest of your class already being really Montez Sweat, Ryan Bates, and Keenan Allen. That's quality. I don't know that you use that to argue taking a punter, even though he is the awesome Aussie. So I would probably not do that. The only thing I would consider is if you're at the fourth round pick and somebody from, you know, the Denver Broncos are fixated on getting a center or a guard or a tight end that you don't necessarily want, and they give you a fifth round pick to move back nine spots in the fourth round, you accumulate an extra pick and you use a pick after that or the one you got to move back to in the fourth to draft a punter. All right, I wouldn't quibble with that. But I don't know that it's going to be a priority. Nothing screaming awesome Aussie in the Bears draft room, I don't think. Not even, blimey, awesome Aussie. Take him, Torrey Taylor. And he'd be a character. He'd be fun. I don't know, but I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it.
I'm with you. I would probably lean no on this one. Even though I do agree that the Bears should consider strongly looking at a new punter. And I've always been steadfast on this. I hate the idea of drafting kickers or punters before the sixth or seventh round. Like, they better be really, and I know that Torrey Taylor is good. And it's more surefire that you know what the guy's going to do as a punter than a kicker, a field goal kicker in the NFL. But I can't, especially if they had more picks. If they still had two fourth-round picks, kind of what you were hinting at, if they could trade back. But in a year where you only have four picks, and I wouldn't qualify punter as a need, it's maybe a want, right? Is it that the conversation that we have, yes. the need
it's
versus
more of
the
a luxury.
Want? Yeah, it's more of a luxury. And Trenton Gill isn't great, but he's not bad. And you know, he overkicks his coverage a decent amount, but – I just can't get on board with them taking a punter in a year where you only have four draft picks and you do have one on your roster that is fine. I can't get on board with it. So maybe next year or just never draft a punter because you can just kind of fall into the lap on those ones.
I think there's going to be a couple things to keep an eye on too with these rules changes. Don't know quite how it's going to affect rosters and how it's going to affect the game. If you can find a place kicker, maybe it's a punter who is also a place kicker, can Taylor kick? Because if you can find somebody to angle the ball so it hits the target zone and rolls into the end zone rather than just as an automatic touchback, then you're talking about a 15-yard difference. If you can find a guy to save you 15 yards every kickoff, you probably would draft him. I don't know how that's going to evolve, but it's something to keep an eye on. and it might be good news. The rules changes were good news for two subsets of football people, special teams coordinators and kickers, and maybe scat backs. But I think the kickers especially, because if you can find that specific skill set, you're going to want to be exploit it, and you're going to be pretty popular.
Yeah, right. And you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because I hadn't thought about that aspect. So that does place more value on if Tory Taylor can pin that thing on the 5-yard line every single time, then there is a good amount of value in that.
It is something to consider. So good questions today. A couple little tidbits just before we get out of here. Number one, we talked about the rules changes. We'll get into more depth when Dan gets back, because I think that there's some roster considerations that, you know, are big unintended consequences, which are worth discussing here, especially as it pertains to the Bears. Secondly, the pro day circuit this week was very interesting. Jaden Daniels, mixed reviews to see how he threw at LSU. Certainly some people thought he looked like the guy that was worthy of being the second or third, or maybe even first overall pick. Bears aren't going to do that. Other people said that he wasn't really as sharp as he could have been. Drake May also worked out in North Carolina, apparently looked pretty good. Bears were not there. Ryan Poles attended LSU's pro day, did not attend North Carolina's pro day. He also attended the Bulls game after he attended the LSU pro day. So he maybe he had wanted to just go see the Bulls play for whatever reason. And then Michael Penix Jr. clocked a 4.43 40-yard dash, I believe. Or maybe it was a 4.5. He was in the 4.5 range, and then he threw like you expected him to throw. He's a guy sneaking up. He could be the fifth quarterback taken in the first round if indeed teams are impressed enough to take a chance on Michael Penix Jr., whose left-handed arm is as dangerous as they come, and I think that's an interesting guy moving into the draft. So busy week of evaluation, busy week of speculation, and it will just continue because the draft is right around the corner on April 25th. So thank you for your question.
It was a 4.46 for Michael Penix.
Michael Penix ran a 4.46. That's for a quarterback, that's flying. And then he had like a 10-foot broad jump, standing broad jump, 10 feet. I mean, he could stand on the
three. He's more athletic than I thought.
He could stand on the 3-yard line and leap into the end zone. If there was a red zone play where he could do that, he could do that. Yeah, he's very athletic. And, you know, the only thing with him is that he's been injured so much. He's got so many surgeries on his resume that it's hard not to wonder or worry if he's going to be injury prone in the NFL. So great athlete. The first round is loaded with quarterback talent as well as wide receiver talent and offensive tackle talent. I think those three positions are the deepest, which is a good year for the Bears to be looking for at least two of those three, maybe all three. So anyway, keep the questions coming. We'll do another mailbag down the road. You can email us at takethenorthpod@gmail.com. And then you can tweet us at takethenorthpod on Twitter or X. And you can also send us directly if you want. And just let us know. So I think that's going to wrap it up, Adam. Anything else we need to add?
That's all I got. And that's all I got.
Cool.
Bear down.
Yeah, Dan should be back next week. Hopefully he's enjoying the vacation. And for Adam Sadinski and Dan Wiederer, I am David Hall. Thank you for listening to the Take the North podcast and watching us on the 670 Scores YouTube page. We'll talk to you next week.
Oh, great talk. See you out there.